Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a meta-analysis, meaning a lot of different studies, showed the green coffee bean extract, not coffee, but the green coffee bean, can help lower your C-reactive protein levels. That's important, because C-reactive protein levels, when they're elevated, increase your risk of a heart attack or stroke. So, we don't want anyone having a heart attack or stroke, so one simple piece of a puzzle. Green coffee bean extract. You can buy it online, any health food store, and it can lower that. Now, also, the B-complex can lower it, specifically folic acid, 500 micrograms, 25 milligrams of B1, B2, B6, and vitamin C. That can also lower C-reactive protein. Mind you, C-reactive protein is one of these inflammatory markers that when it's elevated, you will have a greater opportunity for a stroke, heart attack, even cancer. We have a lot more on health and healing coming at you. Let me just tell you what else is happening today. We're going to play a short part of a documentary, really good documentary. It's a short documentary. It's called A Shot in the Dark. Why is this important? Because right now there is a massive campaign underway to make sure that everyone gets mandatory vaccines. And to do that, they're starting a public relations campaign to try to shame anyone who chooses not to, for whatever reason, to become vaccinated, not just with the COVID vaccine, but any other one of the recommended vaccines. So we want to make sure that you know you have a freedom of choice. For example, in the current issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, they're saying that anyone who refuses the mandatory coronavirus vaccines should be severely punished, locked in their homes, and fired from their jobs. My God. They have an experimental vaccine that is putting nanoparticles that can communicate with our body and then be communicated with our cells, actually influenced by outside artificial intelligence. That we know. That's not dispute. That is open knowledge at this point. They have never tested this vaccine properly. It's been rushed through. All of these people are rushing it through because they're all looking at the rewards financially, hundreds of millions to $1 trillion on the high end that could come from this, the most profitable economic venture in world history, the vaccines. So now, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all of the media is saying, don't trust anyone or believe anyone who is saying they're not going to get a vaccine. They're a danger. Because once they convince you that anyone who objects to a vaccine is a danger, then it allows them, state, federal, and local authorities, to punish people. And that's the new medical fascism. And it's real. Medicine today is not practiced as a healing art, it's practiced as a profitable business. And it's fake science. And they're committing complete fraud when it comes to telling us the truth about the coronavirus. And this is from the dishonesty when they tried to destroy our confidence in using an existing inexpensive and very effective drug, hydroxychloroquine with zinc. They're only interested in protecting the vaccine company's interests and those affiliated with it, which are a lot of people. So if you refuse to take a vaccine that they're saying you must take, then they want to punish you. And now this message is going to all the doctors in America through the New England Journal of Medicine. To me, personally, that shows that first this must be challenged in a court of law, and we will be trying to lead a lawsuit against mandatory vaccines. We'll be fighting on your behalf. I'm hiring lawyers now. In fact, we're interviewing lawyers now who have trial experience and are good at formulating lawsuits. We'll be working with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his group, the Children's Defense Fund, and their lawyers, because we must all fight this. Otherwise, what are you going to do when they show up at your door, give you a crappy, completely fraudulent, totally junk science antibody test that's worthless, and then say, oh, you're positive, you must be vaccinated or quarantined. Now you're a prisoner. not in a jail cell, in your home. You can't go outside. And then they can vaccinate you, and then that vaccine is like wearing an ankle bracelet if you're a prisoner. It will know where you're at, monitor your every move. They even acknowledge, DARPA acknowledged, they're going to use it on soldiers that have no choice. They must comply. Like a GPS, they said. So any place you go, they'll know. Who you meet with, they'll know. And if you fight them on any level, like a conscientious objector not wanting to fight in a stupid war like Vietnam, they can punish you, and they will. So that's why I'm doing these discussions, these programs, and that's why you're going to see part of this documentary on A Shot in the Dark. And by the way, that came from Harrison Coulter and Barbara Lou Fisher, who discovered that the DPT shot was causing massive brain damage. And I wanted to interview him. And I went to Washington, where I knew he lived, and I was filming in Washington. Couldn't find him. Nobody knew where he went. And I then thought, well, how old is he? Well, he's up there. Well, is it possible that I'm not able to find him because he's in a nursing home or assisted living center? So I had someone calling every single center in the Washington, D.C. area. And lo and behold, we found him in a hospice care. And it was really, it was in and of itself, it was crisis time, because when I saw him originally, he was, you know, very, very nice looking guy, well groomed, and now here he is with this bed sheet on. But he got up and he did the interview, and we have it on record. We have it, I'm putting it in a new film. Harrison Coulter, his last interview before he passed. What he said then, what he said in the 1960s, is absolutely true today. There's never been proven by any gold standard of science a safe and effective vaccine for everyone. So we're going to play that clip. But also today we're playing some other clips. For example, we're going to play you a clip today, and you'll have a chance to call in after each clip, from James Corbett. Now, James is simply one of the three best investigative journalists in the world, in my opinion. John Pilger's another one. He would be one of those. But James Corbett's going to talk about contact tracing. That's a 17-minute clip. You can see the whole clip by going to prn.fm, but I'll play you a part of it. And the third clip is Whole Foods, the big chain owned by Jeff Bezos. And they did an investigation. This was some years ago, but it's important to know what they did and why. They were selling food that said California vegetables, you know, 365, their own brand name. But you look on the back and it said in China. It was grown in China. And then a group did an investigation on this. And I'll show you that and why, even though time has gone by, why would a major corporation that didn't have to do this, why did they do it? Why are everyday corporations doing something that's unethical or immoral or illegal when they don't have to? It's about the ethics. So that's our program today. Now let's go continue on with our discussion of health and nutrition. So now, for those of you who know someone with multiple sclerosis, University of California at Irvine published an article in the Journal of Biological Chemistry that suggests that in acetylglucosamine, that's a form of glucosamine, glucosamine, amine at the end of a word means amino acid. It is found in your joints and other tissues and against nerve demyelinization that characterizes multiple sclerosis. Well, maybe you don't understand demyelinization. That occurs when several neurological conditions are in play. Your myelin, M-Y-E-L-I-N, insulates the axons that extend from nerve cells and increases electrical signal conduction speed between neurons. So a team led by a doctor, MD, PhD, professor of neurology and microbiology and molecular genetics at University of California, found that in acetylglucosamine prevented neuroaxon damage in this experiment. with demyelinization induced by a toxin. So that means you can just go into any health food store or online and you buy a jar of N-acetyl, A-C-E-T-Y-L, glucosamine, N-acetyl glucosamine. And it's a major component of human breast milk, by the way. And it may explain some of the cognitive functions and myelinization benefits realized by children fed breast milk as opposed to a formula. In any case, it works to help people with multiple sclerosis. Again, something to help people. Also, a study from Emory University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation, Cardiovascular Quality and Outcomes, showed that individual psychological well-being can itself protect you from heart disease, especially if you're an African American. So feeling optimistic, you have a sense of purpose in life, and that you're in control of your environment, characteristics of psychological resilience. So no matter what life throws at you, you're able to say, I'm still okay. I'm learning, I'm still okay. That's associated with having better cardiovascular health among black adults. So that is an important study because African Americans have a higher increase in heart attacks and strokes, diabetes and obesity than any other group based upon lifestyle, conditioning, and most importantly, bad diet. So be optimistic. Be really optimistic. You could be protecting your heart if you are. Also today, green tea helps cystitis sufferers and prevents antibiotic resistance. This is from Kerman University Medical Sciences. So if you're one of the millions of women in the United States or Canada or other countries who suffered from a painful urinary tract infection, a common cause of cystitis, make sure you're getting green tea every day. You don't need a lot, but it's really important. So that will help you. It helps you with a lot of infections, including bronchitis, middle ear infections, and cystitis, which is a common infection of your bladder. So definitely take your green tea. The chemicals in the green tea called catechins, cat, C-A-T, edgins, E-C-H-I-N-S, these catechins are powerful antibacterials. And they're active in green tea. By the way, in berries as well, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. They're very good for you. So that's important to help all those people. Then you have, from the University of Brescia in Italy, the natural compounds in autophagy. They help stop or lessen neurodegeneration. So according to news originating out of Italy, prolonging the healthy lifespan and limiting neurological illnesses are imperative goals, of course, gerontology. Age-related neurodegeneration is progressive and leads to severe diseases affecting motility, memory, cognitive function, and social life. But when you start looking at what you can bring into your lifestyle, like a healthy plant-based diet, that releases all of these natural phytonutrients, and that also impacts autophagy, or what is called macroautophagy. It's an evolutionarily conserved clearing process that is needed to remove aggregate-prone proteins and organelles in neurons, meaning in glia. Meaning, just visualize, it's the Roto-Rooter that goes in and cleans out dead or dysfunctional, damaged debris in your cells. That's what it does. It also is crucial in synaptic plasticity. And so you want that. And the bottom line is, the simple explanation is, the more of the natural fruits and vegetables and juices you take in, the more you're able to protect yourself against neurodegeneration. And talking about berries, Oregon State University just released a study from the Journal of Berry Research that showed that ellagic, E-L-L-A-G-I-C, acid, benefits in two studies. There are two different articles showing that raspberries are good for helping support body mass and motor function, including your balance, coordination, and strength, and lessening fat accumulation around the belly in particular. The average American eats a lot of sugar, a lot of fat, a lot of processed food, all of which is bad for you. But raspberries, and raspberry puree or raspberry juice, raspberry seed, it all contains this polyphenol that occurs in high amounts in raspberry called ellagic acid. And raspberry ketone, or a combination of raspberry ketone and ellagic acid, and that helps ameliorate a lot of the damage from a high-fat, high-sugar processed foods diet. So the more raspberries you eat, the more healthy you're going to become. So, raspberries are good for us. They're good for psychomotor behavior, good for cognition, good for our heart, good for digestion. And finally, the University of Birmingham, which is in the United Kingdom, vitamin D deficiency increased the risk of COVID in healthcare workers. So healthcare workers who self-isolated after developing symptoms of COVID-19 were more likely to have a vitamin D deficiency with workers from Black, Asian, and ethnic minority backgrounds particularly affected. So what should we do? Everybody should be taking vitamin D every day. Every worker in any critical care facility or where you're working with patients, you should be taking extra vitamin D, like 5,000 units a day, with maybe 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day, maybe 1,000 milligrams of astragalus a day, about 2,000 milligrams of quercetin each day. Pardiarco, P-A-R-D-A-C-U, Pardiarco, P-A-U. That's Pardiarco, 200 milligrams once a day. Echinacea, 200 milligrams once a day. These were all beneficial. They'll all help you keep your immune system strong. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly into a part of this new documentary. And look, I've done 4 award-winning documentaries, the latest being Deadly Deception, about vaccines. And I only use information from PubMed as my source material, meaning orthodox medicine. This is a little different, but you can watch it if you go to PRN.fm in real time, or you can hear it. It'll show you why, before vaccinating, which is your choice, you should at least know what they're not sharing with you, the downside of vaccines we're already taking. Now, the vaccines we're already taking are having humongous negative impact on people's lives. None of that is being acknowledged. And yet the same identical companies that have given you bad vaccines, that have killed people, injured people, and they denied liability, now they're making the COVID vaccine, and suddenly these people have their come-to-Jesus moment, are going to be honest and ethical and spiritual. Never going to happen. That's why I want you to watch this and listen to it.
Completely safe, and more of Colorado's children need them.
Get your children vaccinated.
Parents ought to make sure their children are vaccinated.
And children need to be vaccinated.
It's good for the health of a child to be vaccinated.
You're required to get vaccinated. It's like a law, a rule.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
It wasn't until 1998 that a mother came up to me and said, "Dr. Larry, did you know that there's mercury in vaccines?" And I said, "No, I did not." And as a medical student, I was trained to critically think. If you see an observation, you go after it and try and figure out if there's a question to ask. So instead of just ignoring it, I looked further into the vaccine ingredients, and I didn't understand why these same ingredients were actually in vaccines. I was starting to hear stories from parents, not dozens, not hundreds, but thousands of stories from parents who took a very healthy child into their doctor's office and then found that their child lost much of their health, whether it was their speech, whether it was seizures, whether it was death, whether it was asthma, allergies, eczema, whether it was autism, whether it was learning disabilities, whether it was inflammatory bowel disease, autoimmune diseases. And every one of those parents were told it had nothing to do with the vaccine. Every single one.
Yeah, I pushed you.
Ever been proven to start an epidemic? I have been seeing families in my practice for over 20 years that have opted out of vaccination. They are the healthiest children I have ever seen. And more parents are understanding the dangers of vaccines, and that's why we're seeing such pressure to mandate vaccines, because more of the science is coming out. We assume that if we vaccinate, we're getting protection. We assume that if we vaccinate, we're stopping spread of disease. Those are assumptions that have never been solidified in science.
And I asked the dad what happened, and the dad tells me, yeah, the shot went in. He was sitting in the chair. I basically instantly see his whole face goes white. His head, like, lulls back, you know. He's, like, staring straight up. His eyes go to the back of his head. He goes limp, and his whole body convulses, like three or four times. Maybe 30 seconds or so, maybe, after you've been given the shot, roughly. And what's kind of interesting is this is a family who had not vaccinated. They were not planning to vaccinate, and then they decided they had to because of the new school law.
A seemingly completely healthy little girl playing freeze tag in the front yard. Mom wakes her up the next morning. She is paralyzed from the neck down. This after just getting the flu shot vaccine with me, her mother, Carla Grivna. Carla, why do you believe this is because of the flu shot?
Because there was nothing else in no other life-changing events or no other medications out of the ordinary given. It had been the only thing that had been given to her or happened to her during the time period. And extensive testing was done at the hospital to try to find another cause, and none was able to be found.
Well, I mean, I have to come from the perspective of a parent who has a vaccine-injured child. I took my bright, healthy, precocious little 2.5-year-old boy in for a fourth DPT shot. And within hours of that shot, I witnessed him suffer a convulsion, a collapse shock, a state of unconsciousness, and he was eventually diagnosed with minimal brain damage, including multiple learning disabilities and attention deficit disorder. We have seen children become disabled and chronically ill. 1 in 6 child in America is now learning disabled. Why are so many highly vaccinated children so sick?
A 5-pound preemie gets the same vaccination as a 10-pound full-termer. They need to be individualized.
And explain why you feel this way and why you decided not to vaccinate your youngest children.
So I have three children. My oldest, I was kind of the sacrificial lamb. He was vaccinated and had a huge amount of thimerosal, huge amount of mercury. And after he had the MMR and the chickenpox vaccination on the same day, we never saw him again for 3 years.
Never saw him again, meaning he
developed autism.
He
lost
you.
Language. He lost social skills. He lost bowel control. He became very sick within hours of vaccination. So I held his hand over the proverbial fire. He got burned. Don't ask me to line up my other two children to get burned again. What kind of parent would I be?
Like, if I was a doctor, I would want you to get sick.
Yeah.
Because the more times you get sick, the more money I make.
That's right.
I don't get sick. I'm just being honest. I don't get sick.
Okay.
My children have never been sick.
Okay. They've never been vaccinated.
They've never been vaccinated, none of that, and they don't get sick.
Okay.
Because the mother's milk in the breast is all the vaccination that they need. That's it.
Do any vaccines contain egg protein?
Oh, yes, influenza.
Do any vaccines contain gelatin from pigs?
Yes.
Do any vaccines in the childhood vaccine schedule contain human albumin?
Oh, yes.
And what is human albumin?
Human albumin is part of human serum, part of the blood that is liquid.
That could be problematic, right?
Well, it could be. I mean, if the individual is not healthy.
Or if maybe some of the human blood components bind to some of the aluminum and develop antibodies, self-antibodies, correct?
If they develop antibodies against the serum component, that would not be good.
Do any vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule contain MRC5 human diploid cells?
Yes. Rubella, varicella, hepatitis A.
What are MRC5 cells?
They are human fibroblast cell strain. They were created by taking fetal tissue and from a particular fetus that was aborted by maternal choice, and the cells, the so-called fibroblast cells, were cultivated.
Do any vaccines on the childhood vaccine schedule contain WI-38 human diploid lung fibroblasts?
Well, they used to, but I don't think anything is made in those cells anymore.
If you could turn to page 3 for MMR and MMRV, do you see that within the ingredient list that lists WI-38 human diploid lung fibroblasts?
Yes, I do see that.
Isn't it true that human DNA in vaccines is typically purposely fragmented?
Yes, and I would say mostly for theoretical reasons, doesn't want to put DNA into intact DNA into vaccines.
These fetuses were all 3 months or older when aborted, correct?
Yes.
What organs did you harvest from these fetuses?
Well, I didn't personally harvest any, but a whole range of tissues were harvested by co-workers.
Okay. And these pieces were then cut up into little pieces, right?
Yes.
And they were cultured?
Yes.
Okay. Some of the pieces of the fetuses were pituitary gland. That were chopped up into pieces to, okay, included the lung of the fetuses?
Yes.
Okay, included the skin?
Yes.
Kidney?
Yes.
Spleen?
Yes.
Heart?
Yes.
And tongue?
yeah. I don't recall, but probably yes.
Are you aware that one of the objections to vaccination by the plaintiff in this case is the inclusion of aborted fetal tissue in the development of vaccines and the fact that it's actually part of the ingredients of vaccines?
Yeah, I'm aware of those objections.
Okay. Are you an atheist?
Yes.
When you were a child, what vaccines did you receive?
diphtheria, in childhood, I think it was probably only diphtheria. Only diphtheria.
You're going to let the government run healthcare? They screw everything up. So why would you let them be the ones to stick a disease into your arms? Never get a swine flu vaccine or any.
Yeah.
I don't trust the government, especially with my health.
This is thimerosal, which is labeled very toxic. It has cumulative effects, can cause damage to the kidneys, to the respiratory system, skin, to the nervous system. It specifically warns on here that it can cause reproductive and developmental toxicity, meaning that it can cause things like autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders. This is immensely toxic stuff.
And it's in vaccine.
And this is what's in the vaccine.
It's important to realize we're talking about a whole range of products. Vaccines are a big one because, of course, you're directly injecting it. For example, this is tetanus vaccine. This one expires. It's a little outdated now. In 2007, and here's the thimerosal. 1 to 10,000 is a preservative. Perhaps the biggest one in the U.S., at least, that's for exposure to mercury is the influenza vaccine. Influenza vaccine is now recommended for all pregnant women, all infants, all children on a yearly basis.
It needs to be stopped.
This is the influenza vaccine from Adventist Pasteur, their Fluzone. Thimerosal. 25 micrograms of mercury per dose.
But I'd like to point out that a lot of people didn't know, and I'm one of them. I've given 2,000 Rogam shots. I've been in vaccines for 35 years. I didn't know that Rogam had thimerosal in it. So I think a lot of the doctors were unaware. They were unaware that even the word thimerosal meant mercury.
Mercury.
The science is settled. Vaccinations work. They save lives. Here's how vaccines work. We study a germ, that is, a bacterium or a virus. We call this particular one Gary. So to make a vaccine, scientists take the bug and modify it so that it can't hurt you. Then by placing it in your bloodstream, like this, your white blood cells learn to recognize that germ, and when they do, they attack it. So should we have laws that require vaccinations? I'm not kidding about this, people. It's serious.
First of all, aluminum. What happens if you inject it when you're a baby? Has there ever been a safety test on it? Never. Not in the history of man have we ever said, what is it happens when we inject aluminum? We don't care, Bill. Gary gets a little shot of aluminum in there. So we're gonna take mercury, we're putting it inside of Gary here. Most toxic substance, by the way, that's not radioactive. Check out your flu shot. You pregnant women are going into your doctors. They've decided it's a great idea to have mercury being injected into Gary, which is going into your fetus. How about formaldehyde? Have you seen any of the articles on formaldehyde? The science is settled. It's perfectly decided. There we go. Formaldehyde for everybody. Wonderful. What's next? That's right. Antifreeze. Propylene glycol in your vaccine. But don't worry, because we know that Bill told us it's safe. So here we go. Into Gary. Now we have what is really a vaccine. See this oozing, disgusting mess? There we go. Here we go. Stuff that. Get it. Oh, you can eat it. There we go. Oh, he's got it. Oh, yeah. Bill Nye and no scientist in America wants to talk about. Where does that mercury go? Where does that aluminum go? They're not finding it in your urine. It's not disappearing when you take a crap. What it's doing is it's being found where? It's going into the brain. And when it hits the brain... That's right. Encephalopathy, brain swelling. It's written inside the labels. That's a known side effect of every vaccine we get. And yet Bill Nye wants to leave that part of this story out. Deadly, poisonous, toxic chemicals and metals. So when they try to tell you the science is settled, that vaccines are safe and effective, you have to know that we've paid out over $3.5 billion, with a B, in damages to children who have been killed and injured by vaccines.
We're gonna go take a look at a rash after a shot that was given a couple days ago. Let's go take a look. We had the Tdap, which is tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. We use an acellular pertussis vaccine here that does have aluminum. It's impossible to get one that doesn't have aluminum in them. I drew lines around this. You know, parents, when you see a large reaction like this after a vaccine, it looks like an infection, but it isn't. It's that aluminum, probably the aluminum. There are other ingredients that might be irritating. Overnight, in 2 days after the vaccine, and I would not do this same vaccine again, because once you've had a large local reaction like this, you would be at greater risk for a really bad reaction.
Leo Smith was a year and a half old when he had a bad reaction to a vaccine, and tonight his mother is sharing his story for the first time.
This video of Leo Smith was shot about 8 months after he received two vaccine injections, including one for diphtheria and whooping cough, hours after getting the vaccine.
Within about 3 days after that he started to have hives and welts and joint swelling.
Amy Mitten Smith says within days he had hives, joint swelling, and a fever, and within weeks, seizures. 2 months after the injections, the symptoms subsided, but Leo stopped talking. 8 months later, the original symptoms returned after Leo caught a cold. This time, Leo developed an eye tic soon after he was diagnosed with autism and later other neurological disorders.
I thought I was protecting him by taking him in to get his vaccines, and I ended up injuring him for the rest of his life.
The vaccine court ruled that the vaccine did in fact injure Leo and awarded him $55,000.
I regret not looking into it. And now it's too late. Too late. Too late.
I'm glad I'm retired now because now I can talk to you. Because you know what? While I worked, I couldn't. Because if I did, conflict of interest, I would have lost my job. That's truth. A lot of my colleagues did lose their jobs. How did I survive 20 years and never get the flu in that environment? ER, high volume. Was I not on the front lines? Every flu case, 300 people a day. Every flu case, it was me. I never had the flu. You know why? I knew how to wash my hands. I knew how to take vitamin D. I knew how to take elderberry syrup. I don't approve of your flu shot. Now you have pharmacists giving it. You bribe us with cards at Target and you tell us this is free and it's everywhere and get it, get it, get it. They're scare tactics and you should be ashamed. And then I will end because I do want my colleagues, the other moms that know what the CDC doesn't do for us. I'm looking around, some of you are my age. And if I'm mistaken, I apologize, but I'm in a generation where I got 7 shots. 26 years later, my daughter got 10. Her son got probably 60. My new grandson's expected to get 72, and I just watched you add more. I'm appalled. Robert Kennedy Jr., you know what he says? His family started Special Olympics. There were no autistic kids. He says that where are the 40-year-olds wearing diapers with helmets on at the mall if you misdiagnose them, if you miss them, because you say they're not vaccines, that they miss them. Where were the special ed classes when people with my generation, there weren't any, because they didn't exist. I have a 10-year-old grandson, and I don't care what you say, that the autism and vaccines don't exist, it does. Because I watched a perfectly healthy, beautiful 2-year-old get those shots and become a severe autistic child. And guess what? He will be 40, walking in the mall with a diaper on and a helmet. Thank you for the studies that you don't do.
There's a thought process in this country that parents aren't smart enough to know the science. And in my 20 years of doing this, I have found that parents know more of the science than most doctors do, because they've been learning it and studying it. It's not difficult to read, and they do ask questions. There's a system in our country that says you must vaccinate, and those parents who speak up about their concerns about vaccines are usually parents whose children have already suffered. They're the ones who have said, I listened to you, and my child got hurt.
My child got hurt.
My name is Matt. I'm blessed with 2 fully unvaccinated children. I am blessed they're healthy. I strongly oppose.
Thank you, sir.
Where are all you?
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lindsay McBratney from Tustin, California. I'm an attorney, a mother of 3 kids, and doctors and parents know best. I oppose.
Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Heidi Hook. And for my children, for my patients, and for my Hippocratic Oath, I strongly oppose.
Thank you.
My name's Laura Menard. I'm a registered nurse and a holistic nurse coach. And my 2 children are vaccine injured. One of them would not qualify under your bill, and they deserve to go to school.
Thank you.
Strongly oppose.
Thank you.
My name is Trina Perkins from Irvine, California, mother of 2, grandmother of 4. I strongly oppose this bill.
Thank you.
Jacqueline DiMajan from Dana Point, educated grandma of 7. I strongly oppose this bill.
Thank you.
What they were opposing was the not allowing for exemptions. They wanted exemptions. The state of California, Dr. Pan, all wanted no exemptions. You had no choice. You had to be vaccinated. The trouble is this goes against the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm, because inside of every one of those vaccine vial boxes, and I have them, you'll see that all the things that a person would fear happening is going to have a high degree of potential for happening. So why would you give a child that has no disease a drug into their veins that bypasses the normal immune system, that is loaded with aluminum as an adjuvant to make it more powerful. That's what adjuvants do. And all aluminum is a neurotoxin. Adversely affects the kidneys, the liver, and it doesn't flush out of the body. It stays in the brain, central nervous system. So I wanted to try to make a difference. I had published 50 articles. I'd done 4 documentaries. All of these were sent to every activist group in the United States because a lot of lay people are shouted down, called stupid and dangerous, when they're almost always coming with a vaccine-injured child and don't want to injure the other children. And so I wanted to give them the call to action scholarship, legally vetted and scholarly vetted material that was accurate, so they could fight back with facts. And so we had arranged, Bonnie Faulkner, a journalist, broadcast journalist myself, had arranged for me to be interviewed by Bonnie for an hour on KPFA, Pacifica Station in Berkeley. And I believed that I could bring information that would allow the undecided parents that they should also oppose this bill. We were censored. We were not allowed on the air. Of course, that's common for Pacifica stations. The hypocrisy of that cesspool is palpable. And they wonder why they don't have any funding, no listenership. Well, take a look at what you've become. So far from your ideals and a higher quality of broadcasting in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and up till 2000. But in any case, because I was not allowed on, it was a very close vote, and the parents lost. Excuse me. As a result, every kid in California is vaccinated. In fact, it is so bad with Jonathan Stoller, Ken Stoller, and other doctors looking for legitimate exemptions because of pre-existing medical conditions, he's now faced with losing his license. In fact, all 90 physicians in California who chose to look to help the parents and the child, they're all under attack. What I would have shared in my interview was that I had done the research on the background of the pro-exemption group of Democrats, Republicans. We found that all of them, every single one, had received money from the makers of those mandatory vaccines, a pay-to-play, clearly unethical, if not fully illegal. The public never had a chance to know the truth that these politicians took money, and that meant that they were obligated. And that's happened in other states, including the cesspool that is New York state politics. New York, nobody should be living in at this point. It's just a dump. And if you're honest, you'll realize it. From the governor to the mayor to the city councils to the state legislators, corrupt at top to bottom. And yet it will continue because people go to where they have a career and where they can make money. That's New York. At least it used to be. For some, it still is. So the truth was not revealed. The truth has never been revealed by the mainstream media about vaccines. And yet we, who are legitimate scientists, experts in vaccination, when we present information in a commentary, a documentary, an article, it is not allowed in any of the mainstream media. They won't debate us. If they debated us, they would lose. Because we have done so many exposés of them. The flu vaccine, in particular, is a fraud. Just want you to know that that's why, remember, the very people who gave you those vaccines that caused all that danger to the body and damage, they're the ones who will have total control over your body once the new vaccine, and the new vaccine is unlike any other vaccine. It can communicate with the nanoparticles that is putting in your blood. What is the nature of that communication? It won't tell you. You won't see any of the science on it. You'll just hear some platitudes from the talking head idiots on, and they're all idiots in my opinion, all sellouts, all propagandists, supporting totalitarianism and fascism and medicine. My personal opinion. I'd like to hear yours. Give us a call. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about what you'd like to say, here's something else that, oh, by the way, that was from Hibbler, H-I-B-B-E-L-E-R Productions. The film is called A Shot in the Dark, and it's a short documentary, 30 minutes long, and you can go up on YouTube and download it for yourself. Also, this is from Off Guardian. Engelbrecht and Konstantin Demeter, quote, COVID-19 PCR tests are scientifically meaningless, though the whole world relies upon the RT-PCR to diagnose SARS-2 infection. The science is clear. They are not fit for purpose. Lockdowns and hygienic measures around the world are based upon numbers of cases and mortality rates created by the so-called SARS-2 PCR test used to identify positive patients, whereby positive is usually equated with infected. But looking closely at the facts, the conclusion is that these PCR tests are meaningless as a diagnostic tool to determine an alleged infection by a supposedly new virus called SARS-2. And at the media briefing on COVID-19 on March 16, 2020, the World Health Organization Director General, Dr. Tedros, said, quote, we have a simple message for all countries, test, test, test. The message was spread through headlines around the world, for instance, in Reuters and BBC. Still, on May 3rd, the moderator of the Hewitt Journal, one of the most important news magazines in Germany, television, was passing the mantra, the Corona dogma, on to his audience with the admonishing words, quote, test, test, test. That is the credo at the moment, and it is only the way to really understand how much the corona is spreading. This indicates the belief in the validity of the PCR test is so strong that it equals a religion that tolerates virtually no contradiction. But it is well known that religions are faith and not scientific based. And as Walter Lippmann, the two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning winner and perhaps the most influential journalist of the 20th century, said, quote, we are all think tank alike. No one thinks very much. So to start, it is very remarkable that Kerry Mullis himself, the inventor of the polymerase chain reaction PCR technology, did not think alike. His invention got him the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1993. Unfortunately, Kerry Mullis passed away last year at the age of 74. But there is no doubt that the biochemist regarded the PCR test inappropriate to detect a viral infection. The reason is that the intended use of the PCR was and still is to apply it as a manufacturing technique, being able to replicate DNA sequences millions and billions of times, and not as a diagnostic tool to detect viruses. How declaring virus pandemics based upon PCR tests can end in disaster was described by Gina Collada in her 2007 New York Times article, Faith in Quick Tests Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't. So there is a lack of a valid gold standard. Moreover, it is worth mentioning that the PCR test used to identify so-called COVID-19 patients presumably infected by what is called SARS-2 do not have a valid gold standard to compare them with. This is a fundamental point. Tests need to be evaluated to determine the preciseness, strictly speaking, their sensitivity and specificity. By comparison with a gold standard, meaning the most accurate method available. As an example, for a pregnancy test, the gold standard would be the pregnancy itself. But as Australian infectious disease specialist, a Dr. Sanjay, for example, stated in an ABC television interview, in the answer to a question, how accurate is the PCR testing, quote, we have had a new test for picking up the bacterium golden staph in blood. We've already got good blood cultures. That's our gold standard we've been using for decades. And we could match this new test against that. But for COVID, we don't have a gold standard test. I repeat, we do not have a gold standard test. Jessica Watson from Bristol University confirms this in her paper, Interpreting a COVID-19 Test Result, published recently in the British Medical Journal. She writes that there is, quote, a lack of such a clear-cut gold standard for COVID-19 testing, end quote. but instead of classifying the test as unsuitable for SARS-2 detection and COVID diagnosis, or instead of pointing out that only a virus proven through isolation and purification can be a solid gold standard, Watson claims in all seriousness that pragmatically COVID-19 diagnosis itself, remarkably including PCR testing itself, may be the best available gold standard, but this is not a scientifically sound judgment. Apart from the fact that it is downright absurd to take the PCR test itself as part of a gold standard to evaluate the PCR test, there are no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19, as even people such as Thomas Loescher, former head of the Department of Infection and Tropical Medicine at the University of Munich and member of the Federal Association of German Internists, conceded to us. If there are no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19 diagnosis, contrary to Watson's statement, cannot be suitable for serving as a valid gold standard. In addition, experts such as Watson overlook the fact that only virus isolation is, quote, maybe the best available gold standard, end quote, if there are no distinctive specific symptoms for COVID-19, and also whether the virus itself is, that is, virus isolation wouldn't be the best available possible gold standard. But she hasn't answered these questions yet, despite multiple requests. And she has not yet responded to our rapid response post on her article in which we address exactly the same points, either that she wrote us on June 2nd, quote, I will try to post a reply later this week when I have a chance, end quote. But she hasn't. The reality is there's no proof for the RNA being a viral origin. Now the question is, what is required first for virus isolation and proof? We need to know where the RNA from which the PCR tests are calibrated comes from. A textbook, White, Finner, Medical Virology, page 9, 1986, as well as leading virus researchers such as Luc Montagnier or Dominic Dwyer, state particle purification, meaning the separation of an object from everything else that is not that object, as far as, for instance, the Nobel laureate Marie Curie purified 100 milligrams of radium chloride in 1998 by extracting it from tons of pitchblende, is an essential prerequisite for providing the existence of a virus, and thus to prove that the RNA from the particle in question comes from a new virus. The reason for this is that PCR is extremely sensitive, which means it can detect even the smallest pieces of DNA and RNA, but it cannot, I repeat, it cannot and never has determined where these particles come from. That has to be determined beforehand. And because the PCR tests are calibrated for gene sequencing, in this case RNA sequence, because SARS-2 is believed to be an RNA virus, we have to know that these gene snippets are part of the looked-for virus. And to know that, correct isolation and purification of the presumed virus has to be executed. Hence, we have asked the science teams of the relevant papers, which are referred to in the context of COVID-2, for proof whether the electron microscopic shots depicted in their in vitro experiments show purified viruses. But not a single team, I repeat, not one single team on the planet could answer the question with yes or no. Nobody said purification was not a necessary step. We only got answers like no, we did not obtain an electron microscopic showing the degree of purification. We asked several study authors, did your electron microscope show the purified virus? They gave the same responses. That's just part of a long letter that challenges all the presumptions that when you get tested and you get tested positive, that you have a virus or you have an active infection from the virus. So you see, we've been given incomplete or inaccurate science. We're out of time for today. By the way, my voice is a little strange today because we started last night, and I did a five-hour lecture to a large group today. We're in the study outside, so my voice is a little strained, and I'll be doing lectures, about 10 hours of lectures a day, explaining the whole process of how we get older at the DNA level in our cells. And hopefully we'll come up with some new and important information that can help everyone in this audience. I'll share the results after the study's over. And yes, we've taken blood chemistries, and so we'll have very objective data to share with you. Have a nice day, everyone.